It's not how fast you get somewhere, but it's the things you do along the way that enrich your life and your experiences.
Welcome to Beyond High Street. My name is Jenny Derrick, and I'm the Dean of the Pharma School of Business here at Miami University. Today, I am joined by Gillian Griffiths, who graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Business, more specifically Accountancy, back in 1992. And I've had the privilege and pleasure of working with Gillian, who's also a member of our Business Advisory Council. So good morning. Well, I shouldn't time it, but hello. How are you doing?
Good morning. Yes, hello.
For all those listening, it is the morning on a spring day, but we're not meant to time things. So, and also I just want to begin by thanking you, Gillian, for the generosity of the recent gift that you've given to support our internship program here at Pharma. And just before we started recording, we're both of like minds and just how important having the right level of service and support is for our students as they embark upon careers and just getting them ready for careers. So I'm just so grateful to you and your family for
support. You're welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you. So thank you again for agreeing to be on this podcast. I know we've talked about it for a little while, and it's great to finally get you booked. So during this podcast, as the listeners know, we do weave through a range of topics so our listeners can get to know you, more about your journey and your reflections along the way. And of course, we end with great advice for our students as well and early career professionals. But my first question, probably the most important, is why did you choose the pharma school in the first place?
It was a combination of things. One, I very much liked the pharma school itself was well rated. Two, I love the fact that there was a core curriculum, you know, embedded in it as well. So it gave you an opportunity to get a very well-rounded base, both broadly from a liberal arts perspective, as well as within business before you had to, you know, start making decisions, which was helpful for me. It was the perfect size school, not too big. It was manageable, but not so small that you were always seeing the same things. It provided a lot of diverse opportunities, enhancements in the broader education, I think, in terms of the co-curriculars, et cetera. And it wasn't too far from home. So a combination of those items.
It checked many boxes. It checked many boxes. And yes. I love that about the school. We give the feeling of small, but we're big enough to provide enough choice. And in fact, one of the things I love about the curriculum for our students is just how much choice they do have and the opportunities to take courses outside of the business school. And we'll talk a bit about that as we go through memory lane. So you're currently the Chief Financial Officer at Clayton, Dubler & Rice. You were promoted to that role from Chief Operating Officer. But talk to us about your career. You really, from what I could ascertain, really worked in two places and with multiple roles within the two places. So take us through the journey that you've been on to get to the current role you have.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I graduated with the accounting degree. I thought that was a great foundation. If you understand how money is made, you can kind of go anywhere. And so I started in the audit practice. That gave me a lot of discipline and understanding. And actually, you get to mentor and manage individuals pretty soon into your time at most accounting firms. So that was really helpful to me. I quickly realized, though, the audit side of the practice wasn't for me. I wanted to see more about a business and really understand it in a broader sense, and had the opportunity to do an internship in what is now called transaction services. And that allowed me to have conversations with the CFO at a very young age and understanding, or experience, I should say, and understanding how the business worked, what was driving the business, the KPIs. And I found that to be really interesting, and it really pushed me to think broadly about the financial analysis and how that impacted the business, how it impacted the financial analysis. And that that gave me a lot of energy. And so I moved into that practice around 1994, did that for a number of years, working for corporate clients, really enjoyed not only getting to know how to do due diligence in the transactions, but also getting to know industries in depth. And then around 2000, I decided I needed a break. So I did take a 3-month sabbatical, which at the time, sabbaticals in 2000 weren't really talked about at firms at all. And so I got a lot of pushback, like, what are you doing? You're on a career path, which is one thing I would say to people. It's not how fast you get somewhere, but it's the things you do along the way that enrich your life and your experiences. Did a 3-month sabbatical in cooking school. Then I went and worked in London for 2.5 years in transaction services, moved back to New York, and then really started to focus on Clayton, Dubler & Rice as the relationship person. And so made partner and then overall relationship partner on that. And that's where I got to know CD&R. They then asked me to come over, be the COO, and more recently move into the CFO role.
And I think for those listening, what I love about your story, a really wonderful career progression through deals and transaction analysis to the role you currently have, and we'll talk a bit about that in a minute. But also, the role of the audit start that you had, and even though you decided it wasn't for you, we hear this so often, just the importance of accountancy and understanding accounting and knowing your way through financial statements and really just how it's a requisite skill for so many other things that people do in their careers. So talk to us a little bit about Clayton, Dubilier and Rice. Now, as I was doing my research, my in-depth research, I see that it's the oldest private equity firm in the world, but even that was surprising because it only started in 1978. So explain that, like, why is it so old? 75 billion assets under management and the 17th largest private equity company in the world. So tell us a little bit about the company and any parts of the history that you want to share.
Yeah, so we're based in New York and London, 75% New York, 25% London, and our original history has always been about partnering financial with operating experience. And so we have individuals who came up through investment banks, and then we have individuals who came up through industry and generally decide that at the end of their career, after being maybe a CEO of a company or a division of a company, that they want to continue to contribute in the world and be involved, but are done with that part of their world. And so we bring on a lot of individuals in the operating world. And that partnership really differentiates ourselves, I think, because they sit at the table, the operating partners, with us from the beginning to both define the investment case and then ultimately sit on generally as the chairman of the board of the investment and then take it all the way through disposition. There's a lot of firms now that include operating experience as part of it, but we've always had it as part of our foundation. I would say that's our distinguishing feature.
So talk to me a little bit about the cooking class that you did and dig into the sabbatical too, because to your point, in 2000, sabbaticals weren't that common. Now they've become more common with some companies. But why the cooking class and tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, look, I was burnt out and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I worked really hard and I enjoyed the work, but I felt like I needed a pause. But I also know I wanted structure around that pause. I'm not, while I enjoy doing things and don't mind doing things by myself, I also realized I didn't want to go travel the world by myself because so much of that to me is about spending that time with someone else and enjoying that new experience. And so I actually had a friend who was English, who had been working in New York, who was going back to London and was going to do this program. I'd always loved cooking and had done a number of classes over the years as a hobby. And this was perfect because I was going to get a chance to live overseas, which I'd always wanted to do it with a friend, and of an interest that I had. And it was 9:30 to 4:30 every day. So it gave me some structure. I'd go to the gym for a couple hours and then I'd meet friends afterwards for work. And so it really combined a lot of passions and interests of mine all together in one sabbatical. So it was great.
The thing with cooking that I enjoy is that at least you have something, you produce something at the
Yes.
end
And
of it. Sometimes
it's a
I do.
different part of my brain
That's
than I
exactly
was
right.
using otherwise, right? It's which is
Yeah.
nice. I find it very relaxing, actually.
Especially when our job, we're paid to think in our jobs. We don't always feel we're producing. So how do you, so that was back in 2000. Now we're in 2024. So how do you manage some degree of work-life balance now? What's important to you in the way you structure your weeks?
I think, each person's different and that changes over the time. My husband's actually retired now. And so for me, it's about how to find that balance, with him in a lot of ways. And so we're fortunate to have a home in Maine. And so I try to, certain weeks, we'll go up to Maine and spend time, and I'll just go back and forth to work in New York so I can balance it. I try to take walks with him to give me time with him. I'll have dinner parties or host people over on the weekends to allow me to spend time with friends and also combine that with my cooking passion. So.
And finding a balance, I think work's always there, isn't it? So I want to switch gears and take a trip down memory lane. I love this part of the
Okay.
interview. So we did a lot of memory quizzes going on here, Jillian. We'll see how you do. So when you look back at your time at Miami, who is your favorite professor and why?
Dr. Rubin, he started me in accounting, and I think was just really supportive of me at times. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I probably switched in my head what different major I wanted several times, but ultimately came back to accounting because of the base knowledge that it gave me at the beginning. And he was very patient and supportive of me going through my decision process constantly.
Very good. What subject did you least enjoy?
I'd say there's two. Tax. I didn't enjoy that as much, which is part of the accounting major, but also economics I struggled with at times. Having said that, I still remember to this day one of my favorite books or classes was about the bigness complex. And so I think you take from everything, regardless of how much of an interest or how good you are at something.
What co-curricular activities were you involved in?
My major one was club volleyball. I was also part of a sorority, so between the two of them, it took up most of my time. I really enjoyed both.
What time of the day was your favorite time for class? Were you morning or afternoons, evenings?
I'd say mid-morning.
Mid-morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
From what I remember, mid-morning. It wasn't 8 a.m., let's put it
Yeah.
that
Every
way.
now and then I have a podcast interviewer. He talks about how they love the mornings, but we do have trouble filling up the 8 o'clock classes.
Yeah,
So,
I
yeah.
bet.
What about
Some
your,
things never change.
oh, I know. What about your favorite night of the week at, while at Miami?
As I moved to my senior year, I really loved the Sunday nights. They used to have a comedy night at the balcony, which doesn't exist anymore, which we really loved because there was a lot of touring comics across the country. And it was a great way to kind of, I don't know, end the weekend, start the new week.
So, did you intern while you were here?
I didn't get a formal internship through Miami despite my strong support of it, but I always had jobs in offices or otherwise, and I feel like I got a lot out of them and think it contributed a lot to my experiences in business. So
And so, I think your point to the internship or the need for internships has certainly ramped up over the
yeah.
years compared to when we were at college. That's for sure. Where did you live when you were in your freshman year?
Emerson.
Do you remember the room?
I don't, I want to say like 211 or 311. I can't remember the
That's
exact room number. But the
yeah.
roommates I had, right, either my direct roommate or the rooms right
Yeah.
around me, were the same women that I lived with my whole 4 years. So,
That was going to be my next question. Where did you live off campus?
U House Apartments.
Okay. Do you ever
Yeah.
go past or visit them when you come to campus? Do you go past?
I go by them, but I haven't gone in. I wonder still if they have the brown shag carpet and the gold couch and
Maybe they
the other things.
do. That's right. Maybe they do. What's your favorite building on campus? Not uptown, but on campus.
That's a hard one. I think the King Library strikes me, but there's a
Yeah.
lot of, I mean, the whole campus is beautiful.
What about your favorite spot uptown? You said the balcony for comedy. Is there another one?
Yeah, I moved around a lot, so the balcony is probably the one. Mac and Joe's. Yeah.
Do you go back to Mac and Joe's when you come back to town? Have you been
I
back?
do. I have gone after a back meeting with a couple individuals, so.
What's your favorite meal to order while you're there?
Gosh, it's so hard. I love bagel and deli. I used to have a lot of those with the smoked cheddar and on a whole wheat bagel late at night. In the morning now, I tend to have them before our back meeting, so that's a
That's
great way.
right. Your back's
And then
good.
at Skipper's, I love the waffle fries with cheese or the gyro or the chicken salad pita. There was a lot of,
All good choices. That's
yes.
right. That's right. What was your most memorable personal experience while you're at Miami?
I struggle with this one. There were so many things that were meaningful to me, and I think the biggest takeaway is the various relationships I had across the campus, whether with professors or with the clubs that I was part of or with whom I left. Those are relationships that I've c continued to this day and have been really meaningful to me in a lot of ways.
That's what we love about Miami and the students while they're here and the alumni as well. And just to reflect upon that, I had a wonderful meeting with some students last week. We have, meet the dean's office hours,
Yeah.
that kind of thing. And we talked a lot around that networking piece. And the students who come here are really good at networking, and they're really good at reaching out and making good friends. And to your point, the people that you lived with in your first year here are people that you've probably stayed connected with for life and support each other. So I think that's a really wonderful attribute of this environment. Do you want to add anything to that thought?
Well, just that one of my sorority sisters and friends there, her husband was the one who married my husband and I. Like, it's been a long relationship, so it really is special, I think.
Yeah, I love it. Is there a class you wish you'd taken when you look back over your time?
I wish I had taken a language class. I tried to get it in and it was just too hard for me given what I was trying to get done from my studies, and when I wanted to do it. But
Was there a language that you particularly wanted to learn?
at the time, I had studied French a lot. I'd lived in Canada for 4 or 5 years, and so I had to take bilingual classes a lot when I was younger. And so that was the language that I had continued with. And I'd hoped to take French as a speaking class as opposed to just literature or other things to help round out that, because when I moved from place to place, I got all the, basics and the reading and the like, but I didn't get to practice my
Yeah.
speaking as much as I would have liked. But every time they offered it, it was a conflict with my
Everything
accounting or business
else, yeah.
classes. Yeah.
So we've moved to the part of the interview where we to give advice and to give reflections. So I know you've been heavily involved with the BAC for a while and provide great contribution to that. But when you think about the topics we talk about, your knowledge of the farmer school, your knowledge of this age group that we're speaking of, what advice would you give incoming students to the farmer school?
I would A couple things. One is I'd say leverage office hours with your professors. I wish I had done that more. And I think their doors are always open, and Miami is a very special school to allow for and the professors really want to engage in that way, and so do it. And I think in so many ways, to me, I struggled with, like, what do I want to be when I grow up? Sometimes I still question that, quite honestly. But I think being able to ask those questions and engage in ways to allow you to learn as soon as possible, I think, can be helpful to you. To try to get in balance, I think sometimes I see students when I interview with them have just, like, focused so much on their studies and so much on their, like, the curriculars that they do, or sometimes it's the other way. And it's like, how do you figure out the balance for you? I'd rather see someone go deep in something they're passionate about than see 10 activities across the board. And do that with pace. Like, you don't have to sign up for 10 activities out of the gate as a freshman. Like, think about what's meaningful to you and then adapt and change as you go on and grow within the school. And I think you can learn a lot from those activities as much as you can from, the educational parts in terms of teamwork and ownership and accountability and a whole bunch of skills that are really important as you move into your career.
I love that piece of advice because it's so easy. We have so many business organizations here, you know that. Two-thirds of our students belong to one. But I think to your point, just to reiterate, I'd rather see someone who's gone deep into a student org, say, or an activity and added value to that than skated across the top and possibly frustrated the student organization as well for not always being present, for not, following through with commitment. So I think that's really important. Now, you did accountancy, and did you always want to do accountancy, or did you come here thinking you were going to do something else?
I had an uncle who started in accountancy, and he was the one who made me think of it in the first place because I always really loved math. I was one of those people who took beyond calculus in college, even though I was tested out. Everyone's like, "What are you doing?" And it was like, what do I get a career in math? And so it seemed like I liked math, and I'd worked a lot in my life, and so it was a combination of those things, accounting. But then when I got to school, there were so many good programs and professors and people. That's when I got distracted with what does this mean and what does a career look like and what's best for me. But accounting was kind of the constant thread.
And going back to the advice, I'm thinking about when you counsel younger people looking at college, and you've talked a little bit about showing an interest and not going too thin across too many things. My impression is that students do feel under a lot of pressure to get the perfect internship, the perfect job, and there's a lot of talk around campus about that. And as a consequence of that, people sometimes feel they've failed if they haven't got the right brand name job. But talk a little bit about, what really matters as you're launching your career and why getting it right from the beginning doesn't necessarily matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, look, I think We're all learning, right? Life is a it's a lifelong learning process that we're going through. And I think it's about asking questions, seeking input when you're not sure, and realizing, today is a lot more about agility, resilience, like and how you adapt to situations and adapt and change with the circumstances. And so I'm not really like, do I want to see a resume with 10 years of experience that switched a job every 2 years? No. But if someone's been in, a couple places in that time frame, I recognize that it's different than the career path that I took where I was. It's more about the why people made the changes and what they did and being able to explain that than it is, the exact path that someone took. What are the learnings you had? Why did you make the changes you did? And the explanations behind that is what I care about more.
So sort of staying along the lines of career management, so what advice would you give someone who's just starting a career and then even extend that into the first couple of years of a career?
Yeah, so I alluded to it before, but I do think it's really a lot about not how fast you move up a ladder, but it's really about the opportunities that you get along the way. I mentioned both that I took a sabbatical and took 3 months off. I also went and worked overseas. And both times I got a lot of pushback from partners to say, what are you doing? You're on a path here to make partner. And I would not change those decisions for my life. In fact, they made me a better person. And while short term there weren't, an obvious like how that's helped me, longer term, I know it has. And so I would say to you, take advantage of opportunities presented to you, like leading an initiative, like something that might not seem like it's directly in line or that you can see a path for it, own it, like try it. You never know where something's going to lead you. And then I would say proactively ask for feedback. I think, you have to own your career. And depending on the size of the organization or where you are, sometimes that's very structured, sometimes it's not as structured. But if you want to move ahead, we always have things to develop, every part of our life. And so the more you can do to ask people, proactively for what can I do next to help me grow the most, I think will take you a long way.
So let's stick into the ask people things comment. So we often talk about mentoring and mentorship. Are you, what does mentoring mean to you? And are you a fan of mentoring programs? Have you benefited for them? Or when you say ask people, might that be more on an ad hoc basis?
I get a lot of joy out of helping people, whether it's find a role or move forward in the role or hone their skills. And so I think the mentoring, I would say, is more coaching, like on the job. So who is my team with respect to a project if I was working at the accounting firm and really making sure that I'm giving them the counsel that they might need or help. I haven't done a lot of formal mentoring programs, like I'm going to partner you with this person and see. I think it's more the natural relationships that form where I think you get the better feedback and the better growth and development from. But that's not to say that if you haven't found that person to help you, that a formal mentoring program might be something you can learn from. So I think you should stay open to all opportunities and then you'll figure out the path in terms of what makes sense for you.
But the key and the key piece of advice in this is to be willing to reach out for help. And to your point, you're wonderful at supporting our students and helping people around you, but many people are as well. And I think just to ask for that help and be willing to receive the advice that's given, I think is a really good piece of advice for our students
I
and our
think both of
counselors.
those are really
Yeah.
important, asking and also being willing to receive and putting yourself in that place to receive it. And some people are better at receiving it than others, but if people have taken the time to give it to you, like you don't have to react it right then. Take it, think about it, and then maybe you go back to have another conversation to say, how do I address X or Y or whatever it is that was brought forward?
I love that. And I think, we often tell our incoming students as well, coming back to be willing to receive. There are so many gifts that we offer students here at Miami and at Pharma. And it's really for the students to be open and willing to receive the gifts that we do offer, and they're not always obvious gifts as well. So this has just been a real joy talking to you, Gillian. I love talking to you. I love you. I love working with you on the Business Advisory Council, and I just love your support of what I do and what the school does. But again, I want to thank you, Gillian, for the gift of your time to allow me to record this podcast. And one defining characteristic of our alumni is just how engaged they are and how willing they are to continue to find ways to support the school, our students, our faculty, staff, and other alumni. So thank you so much, Gillian, and go well as you continue in your journey beyond High Street.
Thank you very much, Jenny. I've really enjoyed my time with you as well, not only with today and in the Business Advisory Council. It's been a real joy to continue to participate and give back to Miami and be part of it.
Thank you. You make my job easy. Thank you.